You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
It's poop. It's a poop story.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deep's World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, comic book creator Terry Sulla. And now your host. He's excited for the NFL season to start again, because it's been months since the Raiders disappointed him. Deez Casillas!
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am back. What is up, guys? Thanks for hanging out. Kicking it with us today. We got a great show. We're going to get into it with our guest in just a second. Before we do that, guys, real quickly, the Kickstarter for Kill Stan, my new comic book, is going to be live in just a couple days on September 15th. So please follow us on our socials. That's inferno.earth on Instagram. Inferno.earth is the website, still under construction as this is released, though. And we are on Facebook, Inferno Comics, or Facebook.com/inferno.earth. Give us a shout. Give us a follow. Follow the Kickstarter page. The campaign's not live yet, but if you follow the Kickstarter page, it helps get us up in the algorithm, and, you know, those gods are not always smiling upon you. So if you could give us a like, give us a share, give us a comment on social media, all that helps. And then when the campaign goes live, if you want to check it out, please support the campaign. We've got some awesome rewards. The book is fantastic. You're going to love it. I'm excited to get it into people's hands. So check it out, guys. And also, I will be in the Pacific Northwest starting next Wednesday. I'm flying in on 9/11 because, you know, what are the odds? Anything bad happens twice. And then I got shows all around the Pacific Northwest. So check the calendar on the website, deezcomedy.com. Check my Instagram, deez.comedy, for all that stuff. I'll be in Rockport, Natchez, Anacortes. I'm missing some places. Belfair, all around Seattle, doing the Quechiste Comedy Festival, an all Latino festival, the only Latino festival in the Pacific Northwest, and the only one where they have to import all the comedians because there's no diversity in the Pacific Northwest. So, can't wait to see your white faces there. Anyway, we're going to get into it with our guest today. He is a comic book creator, writer. He's done all sorts of stuff. He works with Counterpoint Comics on the wildly popular Do You Poo comics, among other things. And it is not scatological. It's about the bear with no pants, kind of. Anyway, please welcome to the show, Terry Sulla. All right, guys, and with us today, our guest, comic book creator, Terry Sulla. Terry, how's it going?
Hey, doing great.
Thanks for taking the time to be here today. Like I said, we were talking before the mic's heated up. You got a little construction going over there and holding down that part of Texas. So are you born in Bread, Texas? You always been here?
I was born in Victoria, Texas. Was in the Air Force for 12 years, where I spent a lot of time in Japan.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then wound up in San Antonio and stayed there for a while.
All right. So Texas and Japan, those are like, you know, pretty much yeah, the same thing, right? The that's crazy. I mean, I definitely want to talk about all the comic book stuff with you and a bunch of other stuff. But I'm so interested in people's, like, you know, story and where they were, how, especially something like that. What a juxtaposition going from Tyler, Texas, Victoria, Texas, which was probably even smaller than it is now, and then going all the way to Japan. What was that like for you?
I was actually on the island of Okinawa.
Oh yeah, okay.
So it's I don't I went to mainland Japan a few times, and there's not much difference.
Yeah.
The big difference between there and here is that people there sleep with their windows down, open, their doors open. There's no crime like here.
Yeah.
It's pretty peaceful.
Well, that's, yeah.
You know, they if it's cool, they open the windows and save on electricity. I was shocked. That was a big shock to me when I saw that, you know, just people sleeping with doors and windows open.
Yeah.
But,
you don't do that.
Everybody's real nice there. I do miss the food there.
Oh, yeah. If you're into that kind of food, man, that's, I mean, I can't imagine the fresh seafood and stuff like that they've got. So, you know, I can't, that's crazy, especially in San Antonio. I can't think, like, and I grew up in LA, like South Central LA. So the idea, mm-hmm. you know, you don't leave a window open, a door open, nothing. I mean, you've got. So you're on Okinawan. I've got a buddy who's actually Okinawan, and it's so funny because they are so adamant, you know, they're not Japanese, they're Okinawan.
No, no.
It's very different.
And they, when I was there, again, I'm old, okay, so I was there like in the late 80s. And they didn't like the mainland Japanese. They still hold that grudge from being taken during World War II and say, you fight for us or you die, you know?
Yeah.
And they still hold grudges even though it's, you know, what, 10 generations later.
Yeah. But, I mean, what a crazy, you know, I mean, I don't know the history that well of how their culture was so different from Japanese or how separate. I mean, obviously there's a separation enough that they felt they wanted to keep that distinction.
Right.
But it's like Sicilians in Italy, you know, they're like, I'm not Italian, yeah. I'm Sicilian. You know, there's a difference. People want that distinction. But it's so funny because we always view things as like our current map, whatever the current map is, and you know, yeah. it's lines are being redrawn all the time. I mean, I'm Latino, my family's from like Jotepec, Mexico, but I mean, if you look at the way what culture is that? It was natives and then the Spaniards and the like been redrawn a million
right.
times, and yeah. It's wild. So, but you liked it down there? I mean, it was good.
I had a good time. When I came back and was in the Air Force, you know, in San Antonio, it was so different.
You learn
when you're in Okinawa, the people you work with are your family.
Okay.
When you're here, it's not like that.
So, were you guys involved with a lot of the locals? Did they work on the base and do stuff there?
There's a lot. There's a lot of locals that work on base. They didn't work inside the building I worked at because it was a secure building, but they basically contract out to the Okinawans for every kind of labor there is, whether it's painting or yard work, you know, like keeping the base looking nice.
Yeah.
Fixing vehicles that are, you know, military vehicles. It's pretty much everything you can think of.
Yeah.
At least back then, they contracted out to the Okinawans.
You pick up any Japanese over there while you were there?
Some words here and there, some sentences. I wasn't fluent.
Yeah.
Enough to get by, like if you're going out to eat or something.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you can, you know, more salmon or whatever, more octopus. maybe you did. I was gonna say I'm surprised you didn't come home with a Japanese wife, but maybe you did. I don't know.
No, I didn't.
You didn't do that whole trope of military. Like I know a bunch of guys. A bunch of Marines that were stationed in the Philippines, you know, they all got their wife that came back with them, you know.
There's so many Marines there, yeah.
No. So, I mean, what got you on your journey to where you're at now? I mean, involved with, Counterpoint Comics and Winnie the Pooh bear thing that like popped up a couple years ago and got so popular. Like you had to have something. I mean, is that where, like, did you want to do comic books or?
Well, I was always, you know, a comic fan. When I was in Okinawa, I was getting them through Mile High Comics. They had a weekly
subscription.
They were like the only ones that had it back then.
They didn't bring him in the PX for you? The PX at the base didn't bring him in for you guys, or?
They got him, but they got him like 3 or 4 months late because they would send him on a slow moving ship.
Oh yeah.
And then sometimes they just wouldn't. They just wouldn't get like a week's worth, and you would never know where those went. You know.
There's no consistency. And I got frustrated.
So when I got back to San Antonio, it was early 90s, and I was really into like all the Image stuff, and I was still reading the X stuff, but I was really into the Extreme stuff, you know, Liefeld.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was probably 98 or 99, which was, you know, the very beginnings of the internet. There was a... I don't know. I think it was called the... Because at that point, it was Awesome Comics.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
Yeah. And I think it was like the Awesome Online Army. And people would get in there in like a little chat rooms and stuff and talk. And I met Rob through there at that point. And kind of followed him around and became online friends. Eventually winded up in Miller World, where had one thread. Rob had one thread and everybody talked in there that was fans. And then he went off on his own and made his own forum and followed him there. And he was coming to Texas, I think it was in 2005. And he messaged me and he said, "Hey, I know you're in Texas. Can you come hang out in Dallas?" And I said, "Yeah." And I didn't think, I mean, I knew he'd be friendly to me.
Sure.
I didn't think we were going to be like friends. And so I went there and he had, by the time I got there, he had this massive line. And my wife was with me and I said, "I'm not standing in that line." So I walked up to the table and he recognized me just from seeing my picture, you know, online, and called me and my wife back behind the table. And we sat there with him for a few hours and he was like, "You want to go eat lunch?" And just basically from there, we became great friends. Through him, a few years later, I met Rob Michaels.
Yeah.
And became really, really good friends with him, too. And I think it was in 2013, summertime, we were at a horrible show in Austin. There was like, I don't know, maybe a total of 300 people that came to it total.
Yeah.
You know? It was bad. So he was just sitting there talking, and he had been doing the Dead Poo book, Work for Hire, with somebody. I forgot the guy's name, and they were publishing through a small press. And the guy started doing things that weren't... well, first off, he was doing more than one issue, which is totally against parody law.
Okay.
Parody law, that's why there's no Do You Poo number two. Parody law, you can do one book.
Well,
if you do more than one, it becomes a series and you get open yourself up to get sued.
With the with Winnie the Pooh is now in like the public domain, does that make a difference for it now? Now he can do...
Yeah, that does make it different now, yeah. We could come out and do it too now. And at the time, but since Marat was work for hire, he was just doing it. It wasn't on him and he was getting paid.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the guy, I think, started making illegal covers, putting different companies' characters on them and stuff like that. I don't remember all the details, but it was something kind of crazy. And Marat just parted ways with him. He didn't want to be associated with the drama.
Yeah.
And so we're at that show, and he said, "I want to do my own Pooh book." He goes, "We'll do a one shot." I'm like, "Sounds good." He goes, "I want you to write it."
Oh, wow.
I said, "Me?" He said, "Yeah, you." He goes, "I want you to write it." He goes, "I don't want you thinking anything about these other books that I've done, because I know you read them." He goes, "You just come up with something all on your own." And I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "No." He said, "We've talked comics forever, and your ideas for how things should have ended or how things should have gone are always better than what they really were." He said, "I want you to do it." So I went home and I thought about it for about 3 weeks and finally sat down and wrote it. And I was really nervous to send it to him. You know, it was my first time doing something, and sent it to him, and maybe an hour and a half later he called me and he was, "This is great."
Wow.
He said, "I'm not changing anything." He wrote, if you look in the pages, it says co-writer Marat Michaels. Basically there's four pages in the book that he drew, and it's the fight scene.
Okay.
Between basically Deadpool and Wolverine, but they're Killer Pooh and I think they called him Gur Animal or something. And it's basically an homage to in Rob's Wolverine issues where he fought Deadpool, there was a big fight scene. So
yeah,
if you compare the two, panel by panel,
they're pretty
close. It's all an homage. He wanted to homage Rob's fight scene in that. And so those four pages were written and drawn by him. The rest of the book was drawn by Dietrich Smith. And I wrote the whole thing, and I, believe me, I had no clue that people were going to like it the way they did. I mean, I knew we'd sell some copies. Yeah. You know, it was Marat. Marat had a following, but I had no idea just how big it would get. It took a few years, but it kept selling.
Yeah.
Marat would do a convention and they'd say, hey, we want you, you know, to do an exclusive for the show. And it kind of took off from there. And so I guess at this point, actually the show was in 2014 that he talked me into doing it. And the book came out in early 2025. So we're about to hit 10 years. Wow. Or 2015.
Yeah.
So we're about to hit 10 years. But I had no idea it would catch on the way it did. I was just hoping a few people would buy it and like it.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting because, like, I always say it's these books that, like, I never see at a retailer, but I also see everywhere, you know? Like, it's so funny because it's not like you go down to, you know, Heroes and Fantasies on Wednesday and you pick up this month's issue of Do You Poo. It's not quite like that. Or, like, you know, you look through the preview solicits and you don't see it. But then again, I see them all the time in collections on you know, in people buying and selling them. I mean, there's people that's like this group, especially these niche groups on Facebook of people who just love them. I mean, I bought a bunch of collections over the years from people and find these things just, and I've a lot of them I keep because they're just really, you know, they're just so unique, right? It's, when you guys, so as this thing started taking off, what was was there a point where you're like, oh, I'm doing this, like I'm doing more of this and I'm going to continue, like I'm writing these now?
Hey, I think it was, I went from Do You Poo. I say the counterpoint. I became the regular writer on the Naughty and Nice book. I don't mm-hmm. know if you're familiar with that.
Yep, got it.
I probably did 30 issues of that. In between, though, he would hit me up and say, hey, we're going to do another one. You know, it's going to be called, I think the next one we did was The Hardly Thin.
Yep.
He wanted the Suicide Squad was coming out, and he wanted the Harley Quinn parody.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I told him, give me a couple weeks to think about it. I'll come up with something. And at that point in time in the comic industry, there was lots of people raising a lot of heck about the way women were being drawn. You had all these, what was it, the Hawkeye Initiative and DC Women Kicking Ass and
yeah.
all these other groups saying, why do you draw women like that? You don't draw men like that. And why do you draw them so sexy, you know, so hoochified or, you know, whatever. And so then, I don't know if you remember, Dynamite and DC both kind of caved, you know, and for a while there, Vampirella was wearing like this weird suit that came all the way up.
Oh, really? No, I don't recall. Yeah, yeah, God. They changed
costumes on her, on Red Sonja, and on Deja Thoris.
Yeah, because I mean, Dynamite lives off, yeah. I was going to say Vampirella, yeah. And then you've got Red Sonja.
Their sales tanked.
Yeah.
And so I think it was maybe a year later they went back.
Sure.
But, you know, that was about the same time they started drawing, like, Wonder Woman more thin. DC was having Catwoman not look as voluptuous as she used to be.
Yeah.
We kind of poked fun at that.
Yeah.
That's what I did the whole book, was poking fun about, you know, I don't know if you ever looked at the Hardly Thin book.
Yeah, I've got a couple. I've got a few.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. In it, she's a real person who has a comic book based off of her. And they tell her, we got to get rid of you. You're too voluptuous.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty much the whole book. But I was really, let me tell you something. Had the artist not messed up the final page, I might have got canceled. I mean, final page, the girls were all supposed to be like blimps.
Okay.
She had taken them to eat at a buffet, and he just drew them regular. And it was supposed to end with like the like, hey, we want you back, Hardly.
Yeah.
You know, because all the other girls had gotten big, but he drew them all regular. And I guess it's a good thing the artist messed up that last page.
Ended up working out.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. Marat's like, let's do it. But I don't know. It might have come back and bit me in the ass years later. You know?
Yeah, maybe kismet in the, you know, there was the comic gods were looking out for you. Jack Kirby was up there saying, maybe not this time, Terry.
But anyway. Marat would call me, and then after that, I think we did Tigamverse, which was a big Marvel had the King in Black going at that time. Was it King in Black?
Yeah.
So we kind of poked fun at that one. Then he wanted one called All Out Poo, and that one was just basically our Poo character fighting every hot character in the industry at that point.
Yeah.
We did one called Bad Girl Apocalypse, and that was just all the females in comics that have been known as bad girls, and we had to rename all of them.
Yeah.
Like Fathom, I think we named her 6 nautical miles or something, because that's what a fathom is, you know, or something.
Like that. Yeah, something real on the nose.
So,
I mean, you know, how many issues are you guys cranking out a year now on this stuff between all these different titles?
Probably 3.
Yeah.
You know, we don't do a whole lot. When Naughty and Nice was coming out, it was more. He ended that series. He was going to start it up again. I'm not sure what happened. I think it'll still probably come back at some point. But excluding Naughty and Nice, probably 2 to 3 of the one shots a year.
Yeah.
Lately, he's been focusing on the Willy, you know, because Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
The Steamboat Willy.
Yeah.
And I wrote the first issue of that for him, and it had a good response. But yeah, we don't do a whole lot per year. I've asked him to, you know, because I'm ready.
Yeah.
But probably 2 a year is what I write for him now that Naughty and Nice calmed down. When Naughty and Nice was going, it was probably 5 to 6 a year.
Yeah.
With all the specials and one shots and everything that would happen. So now that it's slowed down for me for Counterpoint, I've been going off on my own. The guy who drew almost every issue of Naughty and Nice that I wrote, his name is Jerry Rasko. Me and him are working on one right now. It's called The Just. Kind of an homage to DC's, I guess you could call it their triarchy of teams. They always had the 3 levels. You know, the grown-ups or the Justice League.
Yeah.
The teenagers or the Titans, and the kids or the Young Justice or Teen Titans. And so we're kind of doing homage to that. And probably have that out before the end of the year, the first issue. He's drawing some fun stuff. So
are you guys doing, is that coming out through a publisher? You guys kickstarting? How are you guys getting those out?
I believe we're going to go to Kickstarter. And we've actually, just from showing little, you know, here's a picture here, here's a picture there, we've had people already contact us and show interest, you know, and taking it after we do Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So it looks like it'll be both.
Yeah. I mean, have you thought about, I mean, I'm sure you thought about, are you able to, or have you tried to parlay this into writing with other companies and more than just the Kickstarter couple times a year type books, or?
I've submitted here and there.
Yeah.
Saying you wrote Do You Poo?
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't a big thing to these companies. It'd be nice. It'd be a lot of fun. I have no delusions that I'm going to become anybody important in the industry.
Yeah.
Although Marat gets frustrated when I say that, because he's like, you are important. I'm having fun where I'm at.
Yeah.
I had another really good artist hit me up about a month ago and say, hey, I like your writing, let's do something. So maybe that'll turn into something, because he's pretty, he's decently known.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's just having that following too. And even because I was talking to someone else, another creator recently, about how, you know, I mean, I still read some stuff from DC and Marvel, but my God, most of it's just terrible. I mean, I'll be done reading and I'm like, why am I still reading this? I hate it. Like, I never enjoy this, you know, like, yeah. I still read the X-Men stuff because out of habit, but man, it's I can't get into it. So I think there's a lot of room for like independent creators and even small, you know, the niche stuff like what you guys can do. People are gravitating towards it, and then that audience grows. And you know, being online with, I mean, I've got a project on Kickstarter right now, and you look at these other projects, and especially for people that are established, you know, like stuff like what you guys do, or Coffin Comics doing like Lady Death and like some other stuff like that. It really, they get funded so fast in like 3,000%, you know? So people are after it, and you can get that. You can go directly to you, sell directly to your client base, instead of being like, well, I'll put this in previews and hopefully some retailers pick it up and, you know.
Have you done many Kickstarters, or is this your first?
This is the first one. So yeah.
Here, I'll give you a little secret here.
Yeah.
The reason they get funded so fast is because they don't really put what they need to pay for everything. They put a small goal, because the more percent you're funded, the more you're advertised.
Mm, interesting. Good to know.
I mean, regardless though, Coffin could put goal 100,000, he'd still hit it in a day.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah. And
I'm talking about some of these other people.
Yeah.
They'll put a low goal where let's say they need 12 grand to pay for everything, because they got, you know, so many covers. They'll put goal 750. That way they start showing the percentage, and Kickstarter advertises more and more.
They go up in the algorithm. Yeah. So luckily my first issue is completely done. It's paid for, written, drawn, colored. It's done. I've even got some copies in hand that I've printed. I did about 150 copies just to start using for promo and some conventions I'm doing. So
what's it called?
It's called Kill Stan.
I'll check it out after we finish this.
Yeah, thanks. The Kickstarter pre-launch page is up. The Kickstarter goes live in 12 days. So really the Kickstarter is designed to help pay for printing, get it into people's hands, and get money towards the second issue.
Right.
So, you know, because it's planned as a 10-issue series.
So, nice.
Yeah. It's something I've always wanted to do. And I mean, I do stand-up comedy for a living. It's great. But, you know, I've had some time and wanted to just finally do this thing. And here we are. So,
yeah, I guess when I realized people were really starting to like what I did, it was probably, you know, it wasn't early. It might have been 2 years ago when it really kind of hit me.
Yeah.
I did a couple of Vegas shows that were maybe, I don't know, maybe 8 months apart.
Yeah.
And at both of those, we had these little private events at our hotel suite after the show, that people, I don't know what they paid to come up there, but it was a decent amount to come up, eat with us, hang out, and we'd sign everything they brought. And these guys were really jacked up to meet me.
Yeah.
You know, and girls too. You know, because I don't go to as many places as other people. I don't hit as many shows as Marat or Dietrich or some of the other guys that work on these books.
Yeah.
So my signature is kind of rare. And these guys are like, I gotta get you on the, you know, just, and, you know, I'd go sit down and I'd get surrounded by three or four guys wanting to talk to me. And it was a lot of fun. I recently did a show in New Jersey, maybe 2 months ago. And I had a guy from CGC come up, say he came to the show to find me, to invite me to do a private signing.
Wow.
And that kind of, I was like, you know, I'm not an artist, right? You know, that was the first thing I told him. He said, well, I know who you are. He goes, and I was sitting here to talk to you. And I was like, sure, yeah. So I think they've already had all the books sent in. We don't have a date where I'm going there yet, but We made it into a joint one with Marat.
Nice. Yeah, that'll be huge.
That was very eye-opening that they wanted me for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you keep doing it, and then one day you realize that there are a lot of people paying attention, you know. So, I mean, how many conventions are you doing a year? How much travel?
Not a whole lot. Three.
No, okay. Are you doing like local ones in Texas? Because Texas has a ton.
Yeah. The last one I did in Texas was in Austin, and that was maybe 4 or 5 months ago. Mm-hmm. As a writer, it's hard to go to a show and make money if you're paying for everything on your own. You don't sell as much as an artist would.
Yeah.
I'll have my books out, but you just don't sell as much as an artist would. So unless it's very local, where I can stay at my own house, or unless they're like, hey, we're going to give you this table, for free or something.
Yeah.
It doesn't pay off for me to hit a bunch of shows.
That makes sense.
It'll put me in debt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can only do so much trying to get it out there.
I do get people sending me comics in the mail a lot, which is kind of neat.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They want my signature, is that elusive signature that they all want. It's,
all right. Well, I'm going to have to send my Hardly Thin over to you then or something then.
Well, you live in San Antonio. Next time I'm up there, I'll let you know.
Yeah. So are you still in doing, you said you grew up reading comic books. What did you read as a kid? Like, what were you into as a kid? What was your favorite thing that was kind of your gateway?
When I was a kid, what was coming out that was, I had a brother that was 8 years older than me, and he had inherited a bunch of comics from my dad that my dad bought. I don't know why my dad was buying them when he was already married, but he was. And then when my brother was 13, he's like, these are for little kids, you can have them. And I basically inherited everything that had come out from Avengers and X-Men at that point.
Okay.
X-Men 1 through, it was like in the 90s or something.
Holy crap. Please tell me you still
have
that number.
This is when X-Men wasn't being published.
You still have that number
one? They had those years between the originals and then the all-new whatever, but there was nothing.
Yeah, from issue 67 to 93 was reprints.
It was reprints, and I had all those too. And so, like, when I was buying comics, 93 had already come out, and there was nothing happening. And it drove me crazy because it was my favorite read.
Yeah.
And then I started finding the new ones coming out, the giant size, and then 94. I have a whole run of X-Men, everything X-Men.
Oh.
I have quite a big run there. I was buying the Avengers books back then. And I was buying heavily when, like, Frank Miller came around and did Daredevil, when Simonson was doing Thor, Watchmen, when all those big hits were coming out, like in 86.
Yeah.
I was buying them off the spinner rack because we didn't have a comic store here.
Yeah, I'm sure.
that was the stuff. I was really into the X-Books a lot. John Byrne was my favorite. I remember being probably 10. I think it could, before that, it was just a comic book, and I'd look at the pretty pictures and read it and think it was neat. I remember being about 10 years old going, man, this guy, whoever draws this X-Men book is better. And I looked up his name, and that's about the time I started looking at names in the books.
Realizing
that some guys are better than other guys, and I was a John Byrne fanatic at that point, and until Frank Miller hit, and Miller, Perez, those guys kind of took over.
Yeah, it is an interesting twist when you realize you're actually embedded in comics. Like, I remember probably about 13 years old when I started realizing that I could, like, recognize, more, be like, oh, this looks like somebody else inked this issue, And you could be like, oh, it's not Terry Austin over John Byrne. It's so, and it's like, you can tell, start to see those differences in what each person brings to the table, So, Terry, do you still have that X-Men number one?
Oh, yeah. Oh. I still have from X-Men 1 through Hickman. I have every X-Men.
I'm just missing number 1 through 4. I have all the rest of them.
Those are hard to get nowadays, man.
Yeah, I mean, you can get number 4. I've got a copy. There's an no, not number 4, number 2. I'm looking at a copy number 2 right now. It's $550. It's pretty beat up, but like I'm all about. I'll take low grade over no grade on those.
Yeah, same here.
And then, you know, my hope is in the next year to be able to get X-Men number 1, but I've seen them for about, you know, as low as about $3,000 that are in one piece. Pretty beat up, but in one piece, you know. So
right. I remember, you know, and after that, after like the Frank Miller years, the Walt Simons and George Perez, I was all into the X-Men revolution with Rob, Jim,
yeah,
and Will. And Mark doing Wolverine, and I was in Okinawa at that point.
Okay.
I was really into New Mutants. That was my favorite. Once Rob took over.
Yeah.
And I had reenlisted, and as part of my reenlistment deal, they said we'll fly you and your family from here all the way to your home, and back. And so, I actually timed it to where I was here. On the day X-Force 1 came out.
Oh, wow.
And so I got here 2 days before that. I went to the comic shop. I walked in and I asked the lady. She said, I'm already sold out. I sold out before it came in. And I was like, no. The thing is, but at that point I was probably 24 years old, I think. When that came out, 23 maybe. And I, like I said, I'd been in Japan for 4 years. I'd been driving on the wrong side of the road, you know, because they drive over.
Yeah.
And I came back and I was kind of scared to drive. And so my mom said, I'll take you. So my mom was with me when I went in there. And my mom said, she goes, oh, man, she goes, you came all this way to get it. And the lady goes, what do you mean all this way? And so I told her how, like, you know, I scheduled my leave from the Air Force and I flew here to make sure I get it. And she said, hold on. And she went in the back and she pulled one for me and she goes, you can buy this one. She goes, that guy doesn't need 20 copies. He can sell for 19.
Yeah.
And then she didn't even charge me. She just said, thank you for your service.
Oh, wow.
Didn't charge.
Do you remember what card it came with?
I had the Cable one.
The Cable one. There you go. You know, it's so funny because, like, that era of X-Men and, you know, early Image, I grew up on because, I mean, I was probably, like, I don't know, when did Image launch? 93?
92.
92, 90, yes. 92. So I was, like, 10, 11 years old when that stuff came out. That was peak for me.
Those are your prime years, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was, and, you know, and I loved it, and it's so funny because, you know, obviously the 90s gets a lot of shit these days, and some of it duly so, I think, but I also go back and read a lot of that stuff. Like I just went and reread the first Epic collection for X-Force, and went back and read a bunch of the early Extreme stuff and early Image, and this isn't Watchmen, but goddamn, it's fun, you know.
Yeah.
Like, there is a lot of fun in there, and I think that's what we lost a lot.
And when it was happening, you know, getting these books with the new coloring styles and everything, you'd open a book and be like, wow, look at this, you know, just these bright, vibrant colors hitting you.
Yeah.
The especially the ones that Steve Olaf did. What was his company called?
Was it Digital?
Polyoptic or something like that? Or,
yeah, something like that.
Those were neat. They just it was people that weren't there will never get it.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the buses pulling up to comic shops and having 600 people around, you know, cheering, or, you know, 2,000 people around cheering in some cities when Image was taking their tours on buses.
Yeah.
And they were like rock stars.
Yeah.
It'll never happen again.
No, I mean, I always tell people, I'm like, you don't understand. Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld were in Levi's commercials. Like, there's no other world that exists where a comic book artist will be in a Levi's commercial. Yeah. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, and especially now, which, like, the... I mean, the art in comics now has changed so much where I feel like everyone is just
so
like...
So much of it looks alike.
Yeah. I mean, almost every book I open, I couldn't tell you who is drawing it. It just looks like some kind of like Stuart Immonen ripoff, you know? Like, you know?
Aside from the one or two standouts at each company, it's hard to tell the rest apart.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was a time when you could open a book and I could tell you, yeah, who, I mean, there were a million artists who all had this distinct style. And, you know, now it's just very house style. It's like we can just slide in any artist and no one's going to know the difference. It's very soft edges, not a lot of rendering, you know.
It's sad, you know, growing up, you know, there was Bill Sienkiewicz and he had his wild,
oh yeah,
you know, kind of crazy style. And then Sam Keith showed up, you know, and Del Keown and there's nobody like that now.
No. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, and a lot of these image guys or early image guys, you know, were maligned for like their specific style. And like, but you know, love it or hate it, they had a style and it's distinct and it was something unique mm-hmm. to them and their books. And they run energy that was only they were doing. No one could copy, you know, whereas, you know, now it's like it's just this just soft.
Oh, yeah. And another thing that drives me crazy is, you know, really liking an artist and they keep improving, or at least in their mind, they're improving. Yeah, maybe they're drawn more proportionately correct, but eventually they get to where this is what I want to draw like, and it's taken away everything that made them them.
Yeah.
You know, like, look at, and I'm just going to say names, look at Ron Lim. Mm-hmm. You go back and look at X-Men 2099.
Yeah.
You open that book up and you're like, this is Ron Lim.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't need to be... You look at his books today, it's unrecognizable. He's just another one that looks like everybody else. Yeah. And it's sad.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny. X-Men 2099 was one of my favorite books. Or like his run on Silver Surfer. Like, yeah, distinct style. Yeah. And then it just kind of went away. I mean, I actually looked at this, you know, I saw a solicit for something that even Lionel Francis Yu is doing a cover for something. And I'm like... He used to be a guy, like when he first came out and was doing Wolverine, I loved his art. And I'm like, is he getting worse as an artist? I'm like, what's happening right now that it's just not, you know, it's.
Oh, yeah. You look at, you can still tell it's him.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But you go back and look at like Silent Dragon and then look at his stuff today. And there's a world of difference.
What do you think that is? What do you think? Is it what the publishers are looking for? They just want everything to be one big unified glob instead of people standing out. Do they fear the another, like, because here's the thing, if you keep everyone as the same talent level, then there's never an exodus and like you never can fear losing them, you know?
I'm convinced they still fear another image happening. Why do you think no artist stays on a book for more than 6 issues?
Yeah.
They don't want them to make their mark.
Yeah.
You know, you don't look at any of these new artists and be like, oh, that's the Avengers guy. No, I mean, you talk about Walt Simonson and immediately your head goes to Thor.
Yeah.
You talk about Rob Liefeld, you go to X-Force and New Mutants. You don't do that with today's artists. You know, there's the exception here and there. Like Dotterman did, I don't know, like 2 years worth of Thor.
Yeah.
But that's the rarity. People get 4 to 6 issues and they're gone. I'm convinced they don't want them to make their mark and be known as, you know, that's the Spider-Man guy.
Right. Yeah. It's because if they can control the height of your flame, you know, and they can, which means yeah. they can control how popular and what you can do and how desirable you are. And
as far as like use style changing, honestly, that I think is just all artists change their styles over the years. To them, they might think it's better, but we don't.
Yeah.
I think it's that, like I said, they improve to the point where they're not doing what made them special anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's it's unfortunate, you know. I mean, it's tough because it's an industry I love so much, but man, I have a harder and harder time finding things to like grasp onto. I mean, I'll find stuff every now and then. Like, I really dig Local Man right now from Tim Seeley and Image.
Oh, yeah.
I love that
That's
a
great.
Lot.
I like that. There's that. I think there's another issue coming out, but only one issue came out from Dustin Weaver, and it was called like Packless or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's great.
Yeah, I know his work. I'm not familiar with that book.
Yeah, he had actually drawn a Wildcat story way back in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't get published. And so he took that art and changed it into original characters.
Oh, wow. Good for him.
Packless came out maybe 6 months ago, and I think there's one more coming out. I love his stuff. There's some Image books here and there that I do get into.
Yeah.
I still read Savage Dragon.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Eric Larson's just doing his damn thing. He's just doing whatever he wants right now, and it's great.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, he might be the only guy that's just doing his... Well, one of the few guys is just doing like, hey, I'm just doing what I want to do. I publish this book and I have fun. It doesn't sell that great, but I'm enjoying it. The people who enjoy it, you know. I got to ask you. You said you have X-Men number one through the Hickman stuff, the Krakoa era. As an big X-Men fan, what did you think of the Hickman Krakoa era stuff?
Well, that's what I said. It's my run stops at the end of House and Powers.
Oh, really? You didn't get into it?
I was done.
Okay.
Hickman drove me away.
I think.
I did buy one. Some of them too, issues of the new launches, the Fallen Angels and all those books that came out, the X-Men, X-Force, and it just wasn't for me.
Yeah.
I didn't like the bad guys being on the island with them. It just, maybe I'm just old and crotchety, I thought that I would never stop. I thought I would buy it until I couldn't take myself to the store anymore, or whatever. But yeah, so I have one, and I'm talking every X book, X-Men, X-Factor, Uncanny, X-Force, every team book anyway, up through there. I bought House of X and Powers of X, and then I bought one or two issues of all the relaunches and new books, and then I stopped.
Yeah.
And I started back again with the new stuff. It's okay. It's not as good as I wanted it to be. You know, they hyped it up. We're getting the best creators and it's just very.
Yeah, it's pretty middle of the road. Here's my theory on this. Tell me what you think of this, being a guy, with some inside track and who also has been, been a reader and fan for as long as you have. My theory is that this is like a status quo holding pattern where they want to be like, okay, we had to shift back to static, kind of like this moderate thing. It's not a hard take. It's not an angle. We just kind of like, and they're doing a holding pattern until they bring the X-Men to the Marvel Universe. And that's when they're going to do a big relaunch of the series, because they, that they always take the books and have them kind of mirror the movies. So this is just like we don't want to ruffle any feathers. It's kind of middle of the road. We'll have Gail Simone come on. That'll get us some social credit. And then we'll just do these books for a couple years. And in like 3 years, when the X-Men movie comes out, who gives a shit about this? It's all going away. We're going to relaunch with a whole new big thing.
Yeah. It's basically a gotcha. I mean, we're going to tell you we're relaunching with great big talent and great, but it's just going to be same old, same old.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when they hyped up, what was it, X-Men Blue and X-Men Gold, told you this was going to be, and they were just kind of
more
nah,
insane.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think you're right. When they bring, X-Men to the MCU, I think they're going to try their damnedest to bring people back to, because, when Iron Man hit, they brought Bob Layton back. He did like a 6-issue mini or something.
Yeah.
They always, every time Deadpool was about to hit, they'd contact Rob.
Yeah.
That's just what they do.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm a firm believer that before Jim Lee retires, he's going to quit DC and come back and do X-Men.
Well, it's funny you say that, because that's actually the theory I have, is that when they relaunch in like 3 years to, because he almost left DC after his last contract, right? Like a year or two ago, and was talking about, like, before Hickman took over X-Men, I think there was some talk of him getting back into X-Men. Well, I think he was like, I'm going to go one more run at this DC thing to make my last bit of retirement fund, you know? And then I think in like 3 years, when they're relaunching that Marvel, or they're launching the X-Men movie, I think you're going to see Jim Lee helming the X-Men. He'll probably plot it. He'll probably pencil the first 6 issues and then do covers after that, kind of like when he did with Justice League in the New 52.
Right.
But I think you're going to see that in his name on the masthead of the new X-Men, and they're going to sell a bazillion copies again.
Well, they're going to sell millions.
Yeah. That'll be crazy. So I'm with you 100%. I vocalized that to someone a couple weeks ago. So I think that is the what we're going to see.
Oh. And he's hitting up. You're right. It's about that point where he's going to want to call it quits.
Yeah.
He's going to have to do it soon. And the timing is right as far as the MCU.
I think those stars are going to align and they're going to make it work. And I see, they talked about it, like I said, a couple years ago, and I think that's going to happen. Even if it's just like where he's, again, you know, he's plotting, or he's just as a couple issues, and then they're like, we just need your name as the guy, the overseer of this, and you know, you can be, you kind of, we'll let you go, and so he doesn't have to be creatively tied down to do a lot, and they would just make a boatload of money.
it'll probably look really pretty too.
I'm here for it. Well, Terry, I also wanted to ask you about, you are one of the administrators on this, on one of Rob Liefeld's pages on Facebook too. How did you get, I mean, obviously you and Rob are friends, you talked about, how'd you get involved doing that? And how much of a chore is it administering, like being the administrator of a Facebook page? Because my God, that seems like it's got to be a thankless job.
I had created a fan page before he did.
Oh, okay.
And he would come participate there. But the funny thing was, and we're friends, like good friends.
Yeah.
And there was a point where I was even traveling with him to shows and working with him. We talk online all the time. He'll call me randomly a couple times a year, three, four times a year. Tells me to call him anytime, but I kind of feel weird about that.
Sure.
I was running a page, and then, he's like, he finally messaged me one day. He goes, I didn't know that was your page, that you're the administrator. I said, yeah. And he said, well, look, I want to make a new page that I own, and I want you to be the administrator with me. And I said, okay. And so he made the new page. We told everybody that was on my page to go to this page. At that point, we had about 2,000 members. I think right now we're about to hit 10,000.
Wow. Yeah.
Administering the page, it's not bad. There's a bunch of nice guys there. It's pretty chill. He wants a positive atmosphere.
Yeah.
Of course, being that it's Rob's page, we get the people to join up just to kind of start nonsense.
Yeah.
Make snide remarks, but I just block them immediately.
Yeah.
I don't engage. That has slowed way down, I think all the ones that were going to do it have done it by now.
Yeah, got them, weeded them out.
Yeah, and they don't. There's not much of it anymore. Well, maybe twice a year. I'll have to do it lately, but not much. And he's very active on there himself.
Sure. Yeah.
He probably does more administering than I do.
Oh, okay.
I mean, not that he has to. I check on another page probably every couple hours. Just make sure nothing crazy is happening, and it's not much to it anymore.
Yeah.
In the beginning, there was a lot of people trying to spam it up, and we had people trying to put religious stuff and political stuff, and really had to shut that down. He just wanted to stay on topic.
Yeah.
It's nice. There's a lot of, I've met a lot of really good guys doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun page. I mean, that's how I, that's, I'm on there and I like, it's nice to, yeah, it's one of the less, divisive Facebook page groups, especially comic book related, because you get in most of these comic book groups. I do stand-up comedy and comic books, and nothing has made me hate stand-up comedy and comic books more than comedians and comic book fans. Like, they just, in general, are some of the worst. You're like, oh my god, like, this is supposed to be fun, silly stuff we're doing, guys. And they really find a way to ruin it.
We're a small community, but boy, we're loud and divisive.
Oh boy, yeah, yeah. So, Terry, I don't want to keep you all day. I appreciate you being here. Do you have anything coming up you want to promote, or anything?
Like I said, me and Jerry have that book coming out called The Just.
Okay.
We're actually going to make a fan page for it.
Okay.
To give you a hint of what the story's about, page one opens with, well, just so you can follow along, it's like the last member of our equivalent of the Justice League, mm-hmm, being dead and getting buried.
Okay.
And they've all been killed over a 1-year period by the same bad guy who seems to have infinite powers. And the story goes from there.
Okay.
And that's what it's about, the mystery of who's the bad guy and you know, where did he come from, things like that. But I don't have a specific date, but I mean, you'll see it on my page, and you can hit me up anytime and we can talk about it.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to giving it a read, and when it comes out, definitely we'll have you back on to promote it more and make sure we get some eyes on it. So all right, guys, well, we're gonna get out of here for today. As for me, go to deescomedy.com, check out everything going on across the network. I will be on the northwest leg of my tour starting next Wednesday. I'll be all over Seattle area, Anacortes, Rockport, Yakima, etc., and then the Quechiste comedy Latino comedy festival in Seattle, 19, 20, 21st, so check me out there. Looking forward to that. And like we talked about the Kickstarter earlier, follow us on inferno.earth, everything going on at Instagram, the website, and get updates and help support the campaign when it goes live on the 15th. So that's it, guys. For the Social Hour, I have been Deese, and for Terry Sala, thank you very much, everyone. And we will see you all next week.